Redemption. The Les Miserables, for those of you who don't know, is a story of a man who is sent to jail for 19 years for stealing a loaf of bread in the first quarter of the 19th century in France. And he becomes a hardened criminal, and then when he comes out, he's transformed because of kindness by a few people and becomes a caring man again. It's kind of about his redemption as a person, as well as about the gross and vicious social system that was in force in France in the first half of the 19th century, not to mention the last half of the 20th century, of course. Well, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and we are kind of hoping to get some help with our phone board so we can once more get up and connect with you. I guess there, what we've learned from another caller, there's a KSCO interference happening with our phone lines, probably because we have a bad grounding, and maybe at some point somebody who knows about that can do something to help us. But I was talking about the Citizens Police Review Board, and they have a meeting on the second Monday of every month at 5 o'clock at City Hall. And that's, of course, tomorrow, 5 o'clock, for those who wish to come. And I, as I understand it, some of the witnesses in the Button Street shooting are talking about coming. One of them, Sherry Peterson, has already filed a complaint with the board. And, of course, the two individuals whose complaints were rejected by Police Chief Belcher have refiled those complaints, and they have heard nothing from the police chief, and of course they probably won't hear anything for months and months and months because the case is in the courts, and I suspect that that's going to be the pretext, or let's be generous, the reason that they are holding back on the complaints until that whole matter is resolved, until the many felonies that have been heaped up against Brian Andrus for responding to police invasion of his home with a baseball bat in hand, until that those felonies are resolved in court for him. Andrus has moved from the Button Street neighborhood, and apparently he was evicted. His wife was evicted by a rather nasty landlady, and we got some rather unfortunate news on. She has apparently mistreated other tenants. But the Citizens Police Review Board, which again is sort of the supposed to be the direct input that the citizenry has into the situation with police misconduct, is meeting tomorrow, and there's an interesting little story on page 2 of yesterday's Santa Cruz Sentinel, again by Karen Clark, which I'm going to read for you in just a moment, after playing yet another song, because we have a phone call coming in and we are still trying to fix our line, so hang in there.
We hope with Skidmark Bob.
Hello, hello, hello.
I think we're hearing you, Bob.
Does it sound better?
I think so. Say something.
Something.
Hey, you did it.
I did it.
I think that your magic has indeed opened up our phone lines.
This wow.
This is a great comfort to me because my voice is about to crash into the cellar, so.
It's kind of funny with all these communication things we have, and there's still always a little few problems that we have. You know, we get the radio stations, which was an AM radio station, coming into our phone line, mm-hmm. which we could legally make a complaint, but, you know.
Indeed. Yeah, I know we have been the victim of a number of complaints. In fact, you were saying there was a complaint against us recently?
Well, it wasn't against us because we didn't do it. Yesterday, KZSC, during the middle of the day, had some kind of live remote broadcast from Aptos to KZSC, and during their live broadcast, someone came on the air and said, "This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, fuck you, fuck this, fuck the world," or something like that. And the person that was in the station at the time never said those things, never even said anything. He just played music. And so KZSC, in their infinite wisdom, to get back at us, decided to put our number out on their airwaves. And so people were calling our station, complaining that we were drifting onto another signal, which wasn't happening. As a matter of fact, our technician was listening to KZSC when it happened, and he tends to think somebody on their end was pulling a little prank. Unfortunately, it may cost us a complaint. I hope not, but I hope it doesn't bring us into any hot water or anything, but just dispel any rumors. It was not us that was drifting. It was some, could be possibly a ham operator that could cut in, and they do that all the time. They cut into your television sets and in your cell phones and all that kind of stuff. They could have done that as a prank, or it could have been someone who was doing the remote broadcast.
Those little devils.
Yep. Well, so someone's trying to get us in trouble.
Well, Bob, you've been following the, I guess, we have an interview later in the show with, hopefully, Carol Denny, who is not only a singer and a street activist, but she's also active in Free Radio Berkeley, and she's been following the machinations of the FCC up in Berkeley around the federal case, as well as this Berkeley City Council's it's actually, I guess it's another agency in the Berkeley area that is trying to stop Free Radio Berkeley from getting a getting a use permit.
Oh, because of the antenna?
Something like that.
Say the antenna's unbecoming.
Unbecoming. Is that
like
what
on top of the roof, out of anybody's view, and the FCC is pressuring people to say that it's, you know, it's an illegal thing, so it shouldn't be there. So say it's ugly antenna, so they can't get some type of use permit to have the antenna up on top of the roof.
Well, Free Radio Santa Cruz has a beautiful antenna, of course. Ours is very stately and very, very well-mannered. And
gives something for the birds to rest on, too.
Indeed, and for the bird brains to think about.
Uh-huh.
Any news? You've also been covering other stories, like the scene on the streets with police downtown. We actually played a segment in which you observed Stephen Lightfoot getting the hassle from Officer Over, who was, of course, Killer Carey's partner in the shooting of Happy John Dine back in November, and has been actually regularly harassing people since. Do you have any other updates on any of that stuff?
No, not at the moment. I've been kind of busy doing other things at the moment. But that was an interesting case that... It's kind of funny that I showed up, and then he was starting to make a real big stink about it, and people were stopping and seeing what was going on. And I guess Mr. Lightfoot's been on other radio stations and TV stations, and you know, a lot of people know him. And so Officer Over at the last minute decided, well, I'm going to do some research on this ticket. And it's like, they don't do that. They usually just cite you, and then you deal with it in court. But
right.
But, you know, that's not how it happened here. Officer Over obviously opted out because he knew that, you know, we all knew our rights. We knew that their sign law, that they were wrong with it because he was holding the sign and it's totally
illegal.
Yeah,
it was a preposterous idea that somehow you can only hold up a sign that is so large, which isn't true. You can hold up huge signs in protest, provided you're not blocking the sidewalk or, you know,
and
hitting anybody with the sign.
What's the sign? There was a woman across the street that just went shopping at the stationery store with this huge placard thing that she was going to make a sign out of, and she was carrying it down the mall. And of course she didn't get hassled. I mean, what's a sign? Does it have to say something on it to be a sign?
What impresses me is that he is so overt. Over is so overt in his, you know, willingness to ignore, or just maybe it's sort of blatant ignorance, I don't know, or sort of menacing ignorance. I think what it really is he's determined to find some way to get rid of people he doesn't like on the mall, and Stephen Lightfoot is one of those because of his rather cranky views about John Lennon killing Stephen King, which most of us find just kind of a hoot, you know, and kind of an colorful part of the scene. But apparently he also was criticizing Police Chief Steve Belcher.
Yeah.
Because Belcher I guess several days before, he had some sort of involvement with another complaint by a store that didn't like his being parked in front of their store or something. Anyway, yeah, we covered that one in the last broadcast. Have you had anything new? Any new outrages you wish to bring before? Let's be generous. Anything from the police department we should commend them for?
Commend them. Nothing yet. I don't know. I've just filed my complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board, and I'll find out later if I can commend them.
Are you in fact filing complaints with that board? With that body?
Yeah. Yes, I have. Finally, I found out through my CNET when I was arrested by CNET in San Lorenzo Park from being able to do a story on the drug war as they were arresting somebody, and I was motionless and quiet, and I didn't say a word. I was standing 25 feet away, and I was recording an arrest that happened in San Lorenzo Park back in December, and I was arrested unlawfully, and my bag was searched unlawfully, and my scanner and my tape recorder were unlawfully stolen from me, from Officer Haley, from the CNET department. So I went to complain to CNET. So I figured, oh, I'll go to the sheriff's department because they're sheriffs. And no, you don't come to me. You have to find out who this officer is from, because CNET is an entity unto themselves. And of course, they, in, you know, they employ different cops from different places.
It's a bureaucratic maze is what it is.
Yeah. So it took me, but since from December, you know, from after, well, after the DA refused to file charges and said it was a joke, he wasn't going to file any charges against me, I went to finally get my tools back, and it took me at least 3 months to get my tools back. So now I find out that Officer Haley is from Santa Cruz Police Department.
So it's back to the Citizens Police Review Board.
Yep.
Are you going to be at their meeting tomorrow at 5?
I should be. I don't know if my complaint will be there yet, but...
Yeah, it probably won't have been processed, but you can always speak about it in, at the oral communications period if you want.
Yeah, it's just funny that, you know, you got people like Karen Clark who show up to something like that, and they'll, you know, they'll invite her in and have an exclusive interview with her, but if I show up to something like that, they'll arrest me. And just how absurd, you know, that, reporters are allowed to...
You're talking about the police department, not the Citizens Police Review Board.
Yeah, it's the police department. And how, you know, it's just, they're just being prejudiced against us because, of course, well, we have our own different spin on a story like every journalist does. And, of course, it's not as favorable as the Sentinel sometimes, but, you know, that's, it's just absurd that they would exclude us. And, like, I remember you guys were excluded from the Happy John Dine press conference that they had.
Exactly.
And, you know, they just don't respect us, and they're going to have to. You know, it may involve a lawsuit over time. But anyway, I got to get going.
Thank you, Bob.
But, yeah, if there's any more problem with the phone, you know, let me know.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
And that was Skidmark Bob, who has his own show on Free Radio. One of these days I'll find out when it is so I can plug it. There are a number of other good shows that discuss similar topics. Phil Freeze's show, Skidmark Bob's show. Maybe those folks can let us know when their shows are, so that you who are listening to my show can also listen to their shows.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I am.
Yes.
Well, I like that. I called Phil Bear and said, let's all go down to the radio station. They're in trouble.
Mm.
But hey.
Yeah, we're back on the air again. I think we're talking to David Sola.
Yes, you are. Sorry.
David, you are, of course, the committee to repeal the sleeping ban Mogul, as well as
Mogul.
Mogul.
Mm.
Ogle the Mogul.
The coordinator.
What news do you have, Mr. Upfront?
Well, there's actually lots of things going on that people should know about. You know, I mean, a lot of people now finally, I was screaming two years ago about the beach flats development plan, but a lot of people finally caught on to this thing, and it's nice that people are participating. And I think it's important people go to all the hearings and really get informed, because, you know, it doesn't pass muster. And so in order for it to be approved by the city council, they're going to have to go against the environmental impact report itself. So if they do that, people should be ready. But I would also like to make a little quick announcement. The Committee for Improved Fish Hook is a committee that's been leading the fight now for quite some time, for over a year now, against the super, super freeway that's planned from Watsonville to Half Moon Bay. And the key element of that is in the guise of repairing, you know, what is really easily perceived as a dangerous fish hook, to, you know, when Highway 17 turns into Highway 1. And when you go, if you're going to go from Highway 17 south on Highway 1, you know, it's also pretty dangerous. The truth of the matter is that a lot of the recommendations the Fish Hook Committee has made over the past year have started being put in place, and the dangerousness of that is really lessened. Our recommendations have been listened to. The one major way to solve that problem, of course, is the San Lorenzo Bridge there, where, you know, homeless people have to walk on this 1/2-foot square sidewalk, and there's no bicycle spaces. That right there would probably improve the flow of the fish hook tremendously. I believe we have Mike Rodkin and other members of the Transportation Commission listening to that. Anyway, for those interested in stopping Santa Cruz from being in the throes of a super freeway development, which will, like, throw all the traffic right onto the streets and really cause a mess, there is a meeting, the regular official committee meeting, emergency meeting Tuesday the 12th at 7 p.m. at Pasatiempo.
Well, that's exactly the wrong time for those who want to be at the city council meeting.
I know. Well, it's always, they've always met at the same time as the city council. I often go to the city council, speak from 7 to 7:30, and then run over to the official committee meeting because they're doing real creative work, and they've challenged the big boys, both the Transportation Commission and Caltrans, and have called Caltrans on their errors. And it's been such a... It's almost like they're ready for a boondoggle. They're ready to have something.
Why should people who are concerned about civil rights for the poor have any interest in the Fishhook Committee? Give us the dope on that.
Well, if you want to change this community into another San Jose, and if you want to turn this community, you know, into an expressway for faster development, then you wouldn't care. And I think homeless people are directly impacted by this. The Solutions Official Committee has recommended actually would make life a little easier. If you're a homeless person, you know that you have to be able to go from the M-Line complex to the Homeless Community Resource Center, and your life is in danger every time you do that unless you walk all the way around to the Water Street Bridge.
Because you have to walk on the freeway?
Yeah, basically you have to walk on the freeway. I mean, you got a half-inch sidewalk, and it's a bridge that's only two lanes on each side when it really should be three lanes plus bicycle lanes and pedestrians. Especially with the Gateway Project, that's one we lost, the Gateway Project being right there, there's going to be a horrible backup of traffic, and that's going to basically mean more homeless people are going to be run over. It's a very dangerous spot for homeless people. But the general impact on the whole community will make for a more, you know, cold and heartless and cement-covered community if we allow them to do this with this super, super freeway that they're planning. They're going to present... They're going to present yet another alternative plan. We've got them, so every single time they meet, they present an alternative plan. Caltrans is going to present on Monday night, the 18th. Wait a minute, that's not night. I'm sorry, I'll have to get back to you on the time. It's probably 8.
Let's just invite people to come to the Pasatiempo Fishhook thing if you don't want to come to City Council and speak on Tuesday night at 7. And where is that again, David?
That's at the Pasatiempo end, but, you know, the cottage just to the right, the back towards the motel, that's where we'll be.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, when you go to Pasatiempo,
mm-hmm.
You know, the Pasatiempo Inn, as you face the Pasatiempo, just to the right, is like some motel rooms. Well, just at the beginning of those motel rooms, in the back of the parking lot, there's a cottage meeting room.
So you go to the cottage meeting room at the Pasatiempo resort or whatever.
And then Monday the 18th, the Board of Supervisors, is when they're going to present their new, improved, big ideas, but they are big, still big, very, very big ideas. And then the first Thursday in June is when the Regional Transportation Commission meets, and they could be voting at that time, and it could be a done deal if we're not careful.
Okay, well, I hope that folks who are interested can follow this. Again, it's a little bit arcane for those of us who are looking.
It may seem arcane, but when you consider the Mission Street development, the impact on the neighborhoods here, the impact on. For one thing, just during the development itself, it's going to mean that the city will be filled with overflow traffic that won't be able to use the freeways. But once the thing is done, it'll just change us into a little suburb of San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
And same people should be concerned about the environment of the boardwalk, the environment of the Lighthouse Field, so and also what they're doing in Mission Street should know that this thing is probably rushing at us. Faster than we had hoped, even though we've been fighting for a year.
Well, David, you know, I'm hoping we can also talk to you about other items coming up on the City Council agenda, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to call you probably in about half an hour to get the update on that.
And you know what I'm going to do while you're doing that?
Mm,
I'm going to be going on the computer and looking at the agenda.
That would make sense.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, David.
Sure thing.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, the radio with the calling number at 423-5361. I've been trying to get this... Police Review Board story out for about half an hour now. I'm going to do it this time. Karen Clark of the Santa Cruz Sentinel has a story called Police Review Board Takes Vote Monday, Panel Likely to Ask for More Authority. And the story says, members of the Citizens Police Review Board are expected to approve on Monday a proposal would give them broader authority to scrutinize police actions. The meeting will begin at 5:30 p.m. in the Council Chamber at City Hall, 809 Center Street. So it is, 5:30 and not 5 o'clock. It used to be at 5, it's now at 5:30. Review Board members want the City Council to make it clearer what constitutes a valid citizen's complaint about police actions and amend that ordinance. More importantly, they want the Council to to give him the right to automatically review any police-involved shooting, even if a citizen's complaint is not filed. Now, on the surface, that sounds fine, and actually I've talked about this at length. This is a spurious public relations move by the Citizens Police Review Board, because they're not asking for the power to automatically investigate any police-involved shooting. They are asking for the power to review any police-involved shooting. And it would seem to me, although it wasn't clear at the meeting I was at, that in order to review any police-involved shooting, they're talking about reviewing the IA investigation, that is to say, the internal police affairs investigation of any shooting. They already have this power if a complaint is filed. So in order to activate this power, they don't need to go to City Council and have a new law passed. All they need to do is have one of their board members file a complaint if there is a shooting. That complaint will then come back to them and require, and they will be able to oversee the IA investigation. There's no problem. Why are they then taking this rather elaborate approach and asking for what appears to be more power? Well, because they aren't using the power they have, because they're under criticism for not using the power they have, because people see them as a toy poodle, which is what they are, because they refuse to investigate independently or hold public hearings around the Happy John Dine shooting, or to order an early investigation of the Brian Andrews shooting, or anything else for that matter. They've never had a public hearing. They've never had any kind of independent investigation or early investigation. All they have done in the course of their 3 years is simply overlook, and the word actually is a nice pun, the police department's own investigation, its own personnel files. So here we have this appearance that they're doing something, namely asking for more power, but they're not, because they already have that power. What they could be asking for, which is the power to investigate, they don't even have to ask for that power. I suppose they could ask for it as a sort of a power that would always happen. Right now, whenever they want to do an independent investigation, they have to seek special authority from the city manager. But there's never really been a problem with that, because the city council, at least for example in the John Dine case, informed them that they would give them that power. At least individual council members said they would. They refused to ask. And the same person who refused to ask, Dr. Bill Christie, who was then the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board and is now the person bringing forward this new motion seeking so-called automatic review of any police-involved shooting, he's the same guy doing this. He is essentially doing nothing. And I don't know who he's trying to fool, whether he's trying to fool himself or whether he's trying to fool us. But it's a foolhardy move. I mean, it does nothing to extend the power of the CPRB. In fact, what it does is it will tie it up in city council debates where you have a hostile city council that generally wants to give more power to the police department, as they've been doing repeatedly, and extending curfews and putting cops on campus and refusing to question any of the police prerogatives that have been coming down the pike. You know, the city council could have held an independent investigation itself of the Happy John Dine shooting, for instance, and then they refused, even after the Citizens Police Review Board declined to do it. So the CPRV is sending this whole thing into this hostile nest. Instead of just saying to Police Chief Belcher, if you don't want to, we are going to make it a policy every time there's a police-related shooting to file a complaint, and then we'll have the opportunity to oversee it, which wouldn't do anything more than they have now, but which is, in essence, what they're asking for from the City Council. They don't need to ask that. They have that power. What they need to do is to step forward and actually independently investigate police shootings, independently of the police department. That's what we're all looking for. That's what they aren't doing. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, good morning.
Hey there. I think I recognize Bob LaMonica.
Yes. Hi, Robert.
How you doing, Bob?
I wanted to get into the issue of police state that seems to be coming upon us, even here in Santa Cruz. The use of secret police tactics being endorsed by none other than the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Now, if that isn't newspeak in 1984, what is?
Yeah, well, we actually, we began to talk about this, I tape recorded the conversation at the Resource Center for Nonviolence 2 weeks ago, and they held their little kind of show forum, which apparently was the trade-off for accepting this COPS grant from the Department of Justice where the police department is going to be paying the salary of one resource center for nonviolence worker in a program which helps to, quote, cut down gang crime and such in the beach flats. The program was blocked for a while by Doug Rand, and then I guess by another Resource Center for Nonviolence member, because they operate by consensus. And Scott Kennedy reportedly threatened to pick up his marbles and go home and quit and so forth, and put heavy pressure on the people who were blocking it, and they finally said, okay, well, we'll step aside. And they stood aside, and they have this program coming in, and what the little concession they got was that it'll be reviewed in a year, and there'll be a so-called forum on it. Now, the so-called forum, which happened 2 weeks ago, was not widely advertised. It was not even advertised among Resource Center for Nonviolence people. This was criticized by community activists Skip Spitzer, Chris Crone, John Malcolm, who were all there. And Kennedy and Larson, who were running this show, spent 15 minutes trying to shut down the cameras and the tape recorder. We refused to do that, finally agreeing only that if we would shut them down for long enough to allow one member of the community who was nervous about cameras to be able to speak. But otherwise, it was a public meeting. It wasn't, you know, one of their private board meetings. It wasn't, you know, a confidential thing. But, yeah, I'm glad you're bringing up the issue. I actually had invited Scott Kennedy to come on the air to talk about this next week on the 17th. He had agreed, and I unfortunately learned 2 days ago. He said he has to cancel out because he will be out of town that weekend. Now, I saw him consult his calendar in front of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and I guess I'm a little bit skeptical here that he hasn't made any attempt to reschedule, that he just doesn't want to discuss this issue openly. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and Scott, if you're listening, I think you're probably not in town. I think he's out of town for this weekend, too. But if one of Scott's allies is listening, if Eric Larson is listening, I encourage Eric to call in and, you know, reschedule this, because certainly there's widespread community concern about the Resource Center for Nonviolence, entering into a collusion with what some consider to be an informant network in the beach flats.
That's exactly what it is, and the thing is that it's indefensible one level beneath the surface in all practicality, which is why, and I'm going to use the label which is so familiar in our town of Santa Cruz, progressives will practice this kind of deceptive politics to get what they think that they want. But when you have the Resource Center for Nonviolence of all organizations in Santa Cruz colluding with secret police, how quickly we forget what COINTELPRO was, how quickly we forget what Nazi Germany was like, how quickly we forget what totalitarianism is, undercover operatives being endorsed by so-called progressive political organizations is the most hypocritical statement of our times that I'm aware of.
Well, we have a lot of propaganda. Like, I was just talking about this police review board piece of propaganda that's being shoved at us by Karen Clark and Dr. Bill Christie, who's on that board, kind of a key member of that board, which, you know, they're trying to give the appearance of seeking more power to oversee the police department, but they're not using the power they have. And I encourage you and anyone else listening to go to that meeting at 5:30 and tell them that this is ridiculous, that if they want to oversee the police department's behavior in a police shooting, all they need to do is file their own complaint about it, or in this case, since there have been a number of complaints filed, they'll be able to oversee that. They don't have to send special requests to the city council, but more important, what they need to do is they need to have an independent investigation. And that can be done very simply, by simply voting to have one, and then sending that to the city manager. And I would suggest the city manager would be unlikely to turn that request down.
Of course it's ridiculous. And what indicates how ridiculous and how long-standing this ridiculousness is in Santa Cruz County is none other than the district attorney himself, Arthur Danner III. The fact that Mr. Danner is going to have a unchallenged six-term in office, and not one of the so-called leadership left, the establishment so-called left in this community, has the courage to come forward and speak out and say, this is hypocrisy. This cannot be tolerated. This cannot be the way that we conduct our affairs. I challenge anyone, and I want to get a plug in here against Mr. Danner and for the community to stand up for something other than looking the other way. I challenge anyone to look at the highly documented track record of the District Attorney of Santa Cruz County going back over 10 years and not say that something is amiss here and this is not the way the office should be represented. And of course, when you have a district attorney that can get away with what Mr. Danner can get away with, then of course you have rogue elements in law enforcement that can get away with abuse of power, sloppy work, downright lying. And we have a community that will practice one level of cowardice after another. And all the one-liners come out about how it's old news and water under the bridge and yada yada, small town. Well, the fact is that the way that these things continue to persist is by our inability to find a way to deal with these kinds of things above board, hopefully diplomatically, but they must be dealt with. If we don't deal with the double standards that are inherent in abuse of power, then we are simply allowing ourselves to slide towards police state.
You know, Bob, I see here on the paper, right next to this police review board puff piece by Karen Clark in Saturday's Santa Cruz County Sentinel, there's an announcement that Dr. Arun Gandhi, grandson of Mohandas Gandhi, is the featured speaker at the annual dinner of the Resource Center for Nonviolence next Friday, May 15th. And this is, of course, the 22nd year of in Santa Cruz of the Resource Center and the 50th anniversary of Gandhi's assassination. He's going to be talking about World Without Violence in the Resource Center for Nonviolence, which will now allow armed officers to stroll about and will be, you know, actually colluding with them in the programs to, again, it's hard to tell. Kennedy denied that there was an informant network being set up. I don't think he was quite clear what was being done. And that was one of the problems. His answers were rather vague. And we'd hoped that, I offered him an opportunity to come on the air to talk about what the accomplishments and achievements had been of the Resource Center for Nonviolence's involvement with the lower, I guess it was Eric Larson's group in the last couple of years that has done a number of things, such as they've sued landlords in order to upgrade conditions. They've gone after drug dealers and prostitutes. I must admit, I mean, I don't live in the beach flats, although I have friends who do, and I'm rather cynical of these what often look to me like election eve attempts to clear away prostitution and drug dealing. But on the other hand, you know, I mean, if I lived there, I might take a different view. And we've spoken to Phil Baer, and Baer has said that he finds it outrageous. Well, he says not outrageous. He finds that it was just a matter of police focus on the issue, that once police started paying some attention, then the problem moved somewhere else. Of course, that's just it. It's always moving around, and it's not, you know, being dealt with. I have a guest in the studio that's just arrived.
Well, thank you for letting me call. Might I get a couple brief words in?
Sure.
What is our tolerance threshold? When do we rise to the occasion of a very basic citizen responsibility to look around us and say, this is indefensible? The signs are all around us that we are sliding slowly but quickly and surely towards a police state. And let's look at that and look at it squarely and straightly.
Yeah, let's
remember the past.
Let's not only look at it, let's do something about it. That's right. We got to change it, because it's not going to change itself, that's for sure.
Robert, thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
All right.
To me, when my body was my own, doctor looked me in the eye, my youngest child asks why I won't ever see her grown. Now I can feel the darkness growing wild inside me, catching my soul by surprise. Know that you've made it, you got your home, your job, and some good times. And they tell you it was death in disguise. consultation. They explained the x-ray slide. I stopped the rising tide of self-pity and cold fear. Pale in fluorescent light, I find no one left to fight and remember all my careless years. I can feel the darkness growing wild inside me, catching my soul by surprise. Lord, that you made it. You got your holy job and some good times. Let me tell you, it was death in disguise. Half the time works there, so people fear the truth. There's no conclusive proof of any danger in those fields. The company never saw my face. They've got another in my place. Another life to be consumed. I can feel the darkness growing wild inside me, catching my soul by surprise. Know that you made it. You got your home and your job and some good times. Let me tell you, it was death, death in disguise.
That was Fred Small from his album Heart of the Appaloosa. And you were telling me, I'm talking now to our new in-studio guest, Tom Rebele. Tom, that's one of your favorites?
Well, I used to use the song The Heart of the Appaloosa as an entrance to my show, which was called Free Country.
Uh-huh. And how long did that show run?
From the land of shooting waters I can't believe I've forgotten it. After land of shooting waters to the heart of the Coeur d'Alene, cymbal berries in the mountains, heart.
Back in Venice when you were doing your free radio in the early 90s.
Right, and well, in 91, and I also used it in other shows that when I've done in Denver and so on.
Now
in New York.
Yeah, well, you've been. We've had you on as a guest a couple of weeks ago. We actually went through your, the rather lurid descriptions of how you were hustled off the air back in Venice, and you're interested now in you're interested in a show that gets something done in the community over the radio in a kind of an active, interactive way.
Exactly, Bob. In fact, I'd like to begin where you ended with Bob LaMonica. Because it seems to me that's a good example of liberal, you know, of kind of liberal activism, whatever. There's a good deal of analysis and information about what's going on in the community, but then there's nearly always you find some bad guys, right? And basically, people who are Well, let's not even put Bob on the spot with the things that you were talking about. But in my case, for instance, recently, I had my car stolen by the Santa Cruz police. And by stolen, I mean that they took it without due process of law, which is clearly unconstitutional. So no matter what rule or statute they thought they were following, it is unconstitutional, therefore null and void, therefore what they did was a crime. And no officer... should be allowed to, after all, they do swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution, therefore, for them to be enforcing statutes and rules of the vehicle code and so on.
What code, what pretext did they use to take your car?
Well, it referred to the fact that I had returned in 1984, since when I became aware that you could not accept a privilege without waiving a constitutional right, and that in this particular case, that I couldn't accept the state's driving privilege, as it was called, as it is called, without waiving my constitutional right to travel freely in my own country. I then returned a perfectly valid license, against which there have been no bad marks since, but I returned it with all the forms of law in 1984. In 1995, the end of 95, almost 96, I got something that purported to suspend my driving privilege. And I wrote back immediately saying, how the hell can you suspend something which hasn't even been, I've never admitted and so on, which I don't believe exists, and so on. And they never answered.
Now, we should say that there's a whole body of legal theory behind this perspective that everyone has a right to drive. You don't need a special dispensation or license from the state to do so unless you're employed by the government, I guess, is one of the concerns. I mean, this is a particular constitutionalist argument, which I know others like libertarian activist Richard Quigley has. So, in other words, would it be fair to say you're driving without a license these days?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. And in fact, I don't really want to get this into that, because this again is one of those discussions that I don't think leads to action. I just want to tell you what happened when they stole my car.
Right.
They stole it. I'm disabled. I'm disabled senior, and they basically left me in the street. And what I should have done, I now realize, was simply to lie down in the street and say, listen, you take me somewhere. As it was at that time, I can't do it anymore, but at that time I was able to stumble off bewildered into the darkness and so on. At the time that they stole my car, I got a notice saying that within 10 days I had the right to ask for a special hearing about whether the car should, you know, whether it was rightfully taken and so on. So I called up, this was on a Saturday, so the earliest I could call up the thing was on Monday, which I duly did. And the police officer, David Newman, said, my hands are tied, can't do anything, got to clear your record with the DMV. Can't do anything. That was when I called up to have a hearing about whether they should have taken it or not. And so at that point I said, well, look, if the state is willing to break all these, you know, break a law that's as basic as not taking your property without due process, I better go down and get a license. And I was able to do so. Then I went back to Newman and I said, okay, here's my temporary license. I got it. And so on. Give me the car. No, can't do it. Why? Because I didn't have a license when they took it away from me. So, I mean, this is a 14-year, you know, I gave up a 12 or 13-year struggle, which has cost me, landed me in jail many times. What?
Did you ever get it back?
What, the car? No, they still have it. Now, this is what I wanted to talk about, is that, the towing company then informed me that I had to pay more in storage than I'm paying in rent, and that there was a mandatory 30 days, and anyway, it would have added up to roughly twice of the street value of the car to pay them, and I couldn't do it. So in the meantime, I fortunately lucked out, found another junker, and have been able to survive. But in fact, as I told them in the street, the cop in the street, D. Flippo, I said, look, this is life-threatening. I said, you can't do this to me. I said, I'm an old man. I have no other means of support. This is the only way I get around. They didn't. It was like talking to stones. And that goes also for Sergeant Christine McMahon, who promptly joined D. Flippo, Officer D. Flippo, because obviously you can't, with a gun on your hip, you can't rob a an elderly cripple without looking for backup.
Right, but now, of course, you were going to say this. You were going to use this case as an example of the kind of action response that you would be working on in your show, if and when that comes on.
Exactly. I want to talk about my experience with this. So, in the meantime, I've gone. I filed a complaint with the police. Rejected. I filed a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board. The first answer I got was, how would you like mediation on this thing. How would you like to mediate between you? You know, perhaps we can mediate. I also filed with the grand jury.
Hang on a second. Mediation, it should be noted. Again, this is one of those little blind alleys that the CPRB has. If you agree to mediate, then unless you can prove that they aren't mediating in good faith, your complaint gets dropped. Not that the complaint means much anyway, but at least the complaint is a record of a concern that you have. You agree to mediation with the CPRB, the complaint will be set aside.
Anyway, I told the officer that I said the law is being violated. I said my complaint is that the law is being violated. What is there to mediate? It either it is or it isn't. And anyway, that's as far. Oh, then I was told that I could come down and address the Citizens Police Review Board, and I'm sure all of you, Bob has had these.
I prefer to undress the Citizens Police Review Board.
Anyway, so what happened there, that was very interesting. You could come in and talk for 3 minutes. Nobody would answer you. Nobody would ask you a question. You could just come in there and sort of sound off for 3 minutes, less or less, and it was held as Bob certainly knows, in the council chambers, which meant that you were sitting basically in the seat of the accused, and sitting up there with the Citizens Police Review Board was, guess who? The officer who is IA for the Santa Cruz Police. In other words, he was in the judge's seat, and I, the accused, was standing there sort of shooting up. Nobody answered. They all went behind closed doors, and guess what the result was? Well, the result was...
Right. The result was they either found your complaint unsustained or unfounded or exonerated. I also noticed that you filed a claim against the city. Was that what this issue was?
Yes, I filed a claim against the city in order to be able to eventually to sue them. I also filed a claim. Oh, then the towing company brought charges against me in small claims court, and I went to small claims court. And the towing guy, in the meantime, I filed against him in Superior Court a complaint demanding other charges as proved, and then $1 million for violation of my civil rights by the towing company, because I'm looking for a way to get the police department. Obviously, they're deeply involved in this. Anyway, the point is that in small claims, what I'm trying to do is to show, because the one thing I think that I do...